just sort of we are fast tracking this contract. I'd be happy to answer any questions about this.
I have a question.
Okay, go ahead, Tony.
What is the outcome of this project intended to be?
Oh, so this project, we fund it, it's statewide since it's through the State Department of Public Health. So CROG works with municipalities throughout the state to do various projects such as demonstration projects. We did a project in Hartford where we did a temporary curb extension. We've also done some educational projects for municipal officials. We did one in for the Northwest Hills Council of Governments where we did a an explanation of how Complete Streets plans and policies work and how they might work in rural communities. We've also done some training for school children or for PE teachers who will ultimately train school children. So it does a variety of small, quick to produce projects for municipalities throughout the state.
But it doesn't really look to solve the problem of rural transportation.
Not entirely, no. This is really, the intention of the CDC funding is to sort of provide demonstrations and encouragement for communities to adopt Complete Streets improvements.
And how would a municipality become involved in this?
We send out a solicitation for projects through the various COGs. So we sent it out through our transportation committee last year. For the previous year of funding, and we sent it to all the other COGs in the state, so they could send it to their municipalities as well.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Do I have a motion to adopt the resolution?
So moved.
John Coleman, second.
Second.
Chip Beckett, any further discussion? Seeing none, I'll call for a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? And the motion carries. Thank you. Moving down to a series of seven action items under the Metropolitan Planning Organization items. For the purposes of that, I will recognize John Coleman.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. My first, Rob, are you on?
Yes, I am. Yes.
My question to you, because can we take one, if we describe all these, can we do one individual motion to pass them all? Otherwise, it's just going to be so repetitive. Or do we have to be repetitive?
I believe we have to be repetitive.
Okay. All right. And just a correction on the agenda, Madam Mayor. I've been informed that item number 20 also needs to be an action item.
Correct. That's seven on the right. Oh. Seven items.
Okay. You can count better than I. Okay, item number 14 is a TIP amendment. First of all, so I don't repeat myself all the time. All of these items have been reviewed by the Transportation Committee. All were passed unanimously and recommended for passage by the Policy Board. First one is the TIP amendments. There's three of them. The first one is for administrative components for Connecticut Transit, computers and things of that type for replacement. Item number two is the statewide TDM, which is CT rides funding for an additional year. And the third is a replacement for a retaining wall on I-84 for a bridge. I don't know where it is, but it's obviously in our region. And I would recommend move to approval of the TIP amendments.
Moved by John Coleman. Is there a second?
Second.
Chip Beckett. Any discussion? If none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Seeing none, the motion carries.
Item number two is approval of the Transportation Planning Program, which is the Unified Work Program for fiscal year 2022 and 2023. We go through this every year. Again, it's a planning program for all of the transportation activities that are undertaken by CROG, and I would recommend an endorsement, approval. So move.
Second.
Second by Scott Shanley. Discussion? Any further discussion? Seeing none, I'll call for a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Seeing none, the motion carries.
Item number 16 is basically a self-certification that we are certifying to the state and to the feds that we have done our annual transportation planning in accordance with the necessary state and federal, particularly federal regulations. And again, the Transportation Committee has approved this, and I would so move.
Second.
John Coleman, second by Chip Beckett. Discussion? Seeing none, I'll call for a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Seeing none, the motion carries.
Item number 17 is the Transportation Committee's favorite resolution of the year. It is the resolution that authorizes the Transportation Committee to act on behalf of the Policy Board until September 22nd, when the Board has its next meeting. And the committee approves it, and I would so move.
Moved by John Coleman, second by
Chip
Beckett. Any discussion? Seeing none, call for vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed, and the motion carries.
Item number 18 is the authorizing the executive director to enter into an agreement with the state of Connecticut to get our money. And again, we have our transportation money for the purpose of carrying out our mutually agreed programs. And I would so move.
By John Coleman, seconded by
Chip Beckett.
Chip Beckett. Discussion? Seeing none, we'll call for a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Seeing none, motion carries.
Item number 19 is our endorsement of basically the state-established and administered FTA safety performance targets. They're relatively benign, again, the Transportation Committee has approved them, and I would so move.
Moved by John Coleman, seconded by
Chip
Beckett. Any discussion? Seeing none, I'll call for a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Seeing none, the motion carries. Last action item.
Item number 20 is we were eligible for, municipalities were eligible for transportation planning study applications. CROG did a solicitation. They received five applications. CONDOT will only allow us to submit two. The staff went through a process of rating them, and New Britain, a project in New Britain, Newington, and a project in Canton came out on top. The Transportation Committee endorses the recommendation of the staff, and I would so move.
John Coleman, seconded by Chip Beckett. Any further discussion? Seeing none, I'll call for a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Seeing none, the motion carries. Okay, so we can go back up to Lyle. Did you have onto our monthly reports, Lyle? I know we kind of cut you off and didn't get an opportunity to really.
Adam Chair, the only highlight I would have is that we're continuing to work on the Hartford Springfield Boston Rail study. We had a conversation with the chief of staff of the U.S. Senator, second U.S. Senator from Massachusetts, Senator Markey. And just to remind folks that may not have seen this before, to put in a Hartford to Boston regular rail service would be about a 10-to-1 payback. It would cost $7 to $9 billion and produce $80 billion plus over 30 years. So we're continuing to work that with our federal lobbyists, and we've had a conversation with U.S. Senator Markey from Massachusetts, and we're going to have more meetings on that. If there are any questions on my monthly report, I'd be happy to respond to, but that's all I planned on reporting, Madam Chair.
Great. Thank you, Lyle. So in regards to monthly reports you were all sent, they were included in the package. I'm not sure that we want to go through all of them, but if anyone has any questions, we will certainly take them up. Does anyone have any questions on any of the monthly reports, municipal services, the policy and planning? Public safety, transportation, Mr. Hartford Alliance, are you here? Seeing not,
I'm here, Mayor.
Oh, Gene, thank you.
Hi.
Anything to share?
So, quick update. A lot of the spring travel is now didn't happen because of COVID, so we're starting a lot of activities this summer and the fall. Some upcoming events that you might want to be interested in: on June 2nd, our Connecticut Health Council initiative is we're doing a webinar on the hidden epidemic. This is looking at all the delayed health procedures over the last 14 months that didn't take place that are going to be impacting our organizations as people get back to work, and it will be impacting our organizations also through cost of service or cost of fees through health systems. Just for one example, 95% of mammograms did not occur last year that normally occur. So there's delayed cancers, there's delayed other treatments that we don't know about that are going to be coming forward over the next 12 to 24 months that are going to be impacting systems across the board. So we're having a number of speakers participate in this webinar, and I would recommend everybody participate in that. Because of COVID, we are not going to be holding the summer our insurance capital summit. We are going to be moving that to an in-person event in 2022, but we are going to be holding some webinars throughout the summer around that. We do also have a lot of projects that we're working on. We have one project that was a win. Unfortunately, I can't yet disclose the name of the company because of non-disclosure, but it's going to be a 400-person call center that will be locating with our region. And we have 16 RFP responses out right now that we're hoping that we can win some of those as well. Lastly, we're working with Mayor Bronin on developing some plans for the ARP funds to focus on small business and retail and restaurants in the city of Hartford, as well as some downtown office space development to take place to fill some of the vacant spaces that are being left behind as companies have shifted to a work from home strategy. So more to come on that later in the summer as we start to implement some of those activities.
Thank you, Dean.
Any questions?
Thank you. So I'm not sure if Alex Johnson or someone from Capital Workforce Partners is here, but certainly would be interested in an update. They are. I do not see Alex on this call, so we'll move along. John, you want to give an update on the ad hoc executive director search meeting?
Certainly, Madam Mayor. The committee actually met today, and we had a training session in hiring best practices with a member of Updike, Kelly and Spellacy, who provide legal services to the CROG. We've also been informed that we did an RFP for recruitment firms. Staff received two responses, and they will be reviewing those two responses with the intent that within the next couple of weeks they will make a recommendation to the committee to endorse that recommendation, and then we will actually move into active recruitment.
Thank you, John. Any questions for John in regards to the? And then we'll move along. Thank you. It seems that I skipped over affordable and accessible housing. Is Anna?
I'm here. Hello.
Thank you, Anna.
Great. Let me pull up my presentation here. Okay. And I will start sharing my screen if that's all right. So hi, everybody. My name is Anna Dorgazi. I am one of the policy directors at AARP Connecticut. And I was invited here today to talk a little bit about our livable communities work, and in particular, to touch on some of the issues with older adults and affordable housing. Is everybody, just if somebody could give me a quick thumbs up, able to see the slide?
Yes.
They have up. Wonderful. Thank you so much. So housing and affordable housing is obviously a huge topic. I think I have 10 to 15 minutes. So, you know, rather than really, you know, get into the weeds with this, I'm going to just present kind of an overview on why we all need to be thinking about livability and some of the issues that relate particularly to older adults. I'll touch on a few of the specific housing needs that we know about aging and older adults. And then I'll just speak on a really high level about some of the resources that AARP has available that might be of interest to municipal leaders. Feel free to ask. I think we have a little time for questions at the end. So I will, with that, just start going through the slides. No, I say that, but now it's not letting me actually forward the slide. There we go. So what is a livable community? You know, a really kind of easy definition of what a livable community is that a livable community is a great place for people of all ages to live. That's kind of the overall AARP definition that we use when we think about a livable community. So livable communities are safe, they're secure, and one of the key features of a livable community is that it offers a lot of choices when it comes to where to live and how to get around. It equitably serves all residents, regardless of age, ability, income, race, ethnicity, and it allows a level of personal independence and allows people to stay in their homes as they age. It's arguably more important than ever that we start thinking about our towns and communities through this lens of livability. And we're at a moment when I think we all need to really start thinking of this differently than we have in the past. And why is that? Well, we are facing probably one of the biggest demographic changes that we've ever experienced, you know, as a state and as a nation. By the year 2035 in the United States, people over the age of 65 are going to outnumber children. This is historically unprecedented. This has never happened before. And that trend is projected to continue. We are going to more, it's projected that we're going to more or less hold steady population-wise for that under 18 population, but for adults over the age of 65, as, you know, baby boomers kind of age into later adulthood, one of the factors driving this trend is just that we're living a lot longer. Over the course of the past century, we have increased our lifespan by decades. And again, this is completely unprecedented. So what does it mean for us to think about our communities and our homes when we know that in another, you know, 30 or 40 years, we are going to see a population of folks who are over the age of 85 on a scale that we've never seen before? And what do we need to do to start planning now in 2021 to make sure that we're ready to meet these needs in the future? The trend, you know, these trends nationally hold up in Connecticut as well. This data is a little bit older from the Connecticut Data Collective. But if you look, going back to 2010, the number of towns throughout Connecticut where you had relatively low percentages of adults over the age of 65, those demographics have basically vanished in all Connecticut communities, with the exception of Mansfield Stores in New Haven, where you have big populations of college students bringing down those numbers. So this really isn't something that any community has the luxury to not take seriously in the coming years. You know, an aging population, I should note, is not a bad thing. You know, in addition to life experiences and wisdom and relationships and all those important things that older adults bring into our communities, they also, despite a lot of stereotypes, make significant contributions to local economies. People over the age of 50 actually make outsized contributions to our state's economic health. So despite being 37% of the state's population, people over the age of 50 account for 47% of the state's GDP. They support 53% of the state's jobs, make up 48% of the state's labor force, and pay 49% of state and local taxes. They tend to use fewer municipal services than younger folks. There are certain services that they use more than younger populations, but you know, they really are in so many ways a net positive to our communities. They also account for an outsized proportion of consumer spending in the state. So adults over the age of 50 account for, again, 37% of the population currently, but they account for 58% of the state's consumer spending, about $80.5 billion overall. So even though older adults disproportionately contribute to the economic well-being of Connecticut, we are failing to meet their needs in some important ways and in some ways that we really need to be thoughtful about and consider as we move into the coming decades. So when it comes to transportation, older adults outlive their ability to drive by about 7 to 10 years. Think back to that chart I showed a little bit earlier, that we are going to have a population of folks over the age of 85 that we've never seen before historically. If these folks are no longer able to drive, what does that mean on the local level for how we get around? What does that mean for where we've chosen to locate medical services, how we expect people to go to the grocery store and interact with, you know, our parks and public spaces? Transit funding and services, I know this is no new news to you. It's difficult. There's never enough money for the projects that we need to take on. You know, we also need to account for the fact that older adults are overrepresented in pedestrian fatalities. That's true in 35 states. Connecticut is one of those 35 states where older adults are disproportionately injured or killed in traffic accidents. We also need to think about social inclusion. So isolation and loneliness present health risks that are equivalent to smoking 15 cigarettes a day. This is data that was collected before the COVID-19 pandemic. And even then, a lot of experts who work in the field of aging were talking about how we're facing a national epidemic of loneliness. And that's only gotten worse in the past year. Isolation is associated with a 50% increased risk of dementia. Again, there's a role for all of us to play in thinking about this, because how we design our communities and where we create spaces for older adults to live has a big impact on how connected they are to other people. For housing in particular, over half of all households are one or two people, whether that's you know, single individuals, kind of just married or partnered younger couples, or older adults. We have a lot of very small households in our country, but more than 85% of our housing stock is targeted to folks who need 2, 3, or 4 bedrooms. The share of renters 65 plus who are rent burdened increased from 43% in 2001 to 50% in 2015. And fewer than 1% of U.S. homes are built with universal design features in mind. So these are the features where, you know, as we have folks aging into their 70s, 80s, and, you know, in the coming decades, more and more of them aging into their 90s, we don't have a lot of housing stock that's going to let them navigate their homes safely if they develop any sort of mobility issues. Just briefly, parks and public spaces. Older adults represent more than 20% of the population. And again, that's going to grow, you know, 30%, 37% of folks here in Connecticut, but they only represent about 4% of park users. So we have a huge opportunity there to figure out how to better integrate older folks into our parks and public spaces, because that has not only sort of social and emotional benefits for older adults, but it also can decrease some of the negative health consequences of lack of exercise, lack of fresh air. And I'm trying to go through these pretty quickly just in the interest of time. So, you know, flail at me if you need me to slow down or show a slide again. So during the fall of 2020, AARP Connecticut asked Connecticut residents age 45 plus to tell us a bit about some of the issues that matter most to them, including issues related to livable communities. So as you can see in this chart, there are a lot of issues related to independent living and aging in place that people over the age of 45 identify as being really important. And we surveyed folks down to age 45. Technically, AARP membership begins at age 50. But we know that, you know, the 45-year-olds today are, you know, in a position now to start thinking about the type of housing that they're going to want in the future. So these are the percentages here are respondents who say that these issues are either extremely important or very important to them. So getting to the places you need to go independently, nearly 9 out of 10 adults over the age of 45 say that this is, you know, one of the an extremely important issue to them. Staying in your own home as you get older, again, very important. Caring for a loved one. You can see there are a lot of concerns built in to these survey responses related to caregiving and long-term supports and services. That might be a completely other conversation, but there are a lot of overlaps between our homes and the design of our communities and our ability to take care of older adults. And then down there toward the bottom, having affordable housing options in your community. Nearly 7 out of 10 residents are indicating that this is an extremely important or very important concern to them. Another concern that came up when we did this survey work was safe streets. Again, very important to older adults, somewhat less important. People are identifying outdoor recreation, sidewalks, public transportation, and bike lanes. But again, you know, you sort of see this theme emerging of, you know, people want to stay in their homes. They want to stay in their communities, but they do have concerns about, you know, as I age, will I be able to, you know, staying in your home is really contingent on your ability to access services in the broader community, and safe streets are a big part of that. Just want to quickly touch on internet access. It's an issue that has kind of come to the forefront since the pandemic. We have a lot of conversations going on at the state and federal level about internet access, especially after a year when so much of our lives has moved online. So again, you can see that this is, you know, availability, high-speed internet, and affordable internet are also issues of big interest to Connecticut residents. So I guess the good news is that when we start thinking about how to create communities, when we think about housing, public spaces that meet the needs of older adults, we get into something that some folks refer to as the curb cut effect, which is this idea that when you create equitable access for one population, it has benefits for everyone. So, you know, the classic example of this is, you know, curb cuts, which we have today because of, you know, really tremendous advocacy from the disability community. But it had a broader impact for folks with mobility issues, but also adults who want to push strollers, for kids who want to use scooters, for anybody who's, you know, this was my cart back in the day when AARP was still doing in-person events. So when we think about creating, you know, these pieces within our communities, whether it's housing, transportation, the built environment, when we start thinking about these with a lens for, you know, how will this work for our most vulnerable users? You know, sometimes you hear the phrase, you know, the 880 concept. You know, we should always be asking ourselves, like, is what we're creating going to work for someone who's 8? Is this going to work for somebody who's 80? And, you know, 80 or older, we still care about you once you turn 81. But, you know, that can be a good litmus test for us to say, you know, okay, this is accessible, this is safe, this is appealing. So I just like this idea of, you know, equitable access benefiting all of us. So to dig more into housing specifically here, for what people want in their housing as they age, more than 3/4 of folks over the age of 50 want to remain in their home and community. The older the adult, when we've done this survey work, the more likely they are to say, I'm not going anywhere. I'm definitely staying here. Despite that really intense urge to stay in their current home or community, fewer than half believe that they will be able to stay in their home. I'll touch on a couple reasons for that in just a minute. Over 60% of all adults own their own homes, and a third believe that they are going to need major modifications in order to safely age in place. Half of adults already share or would be willing to share a home as they age. With major and a big piece or consideration of that is, you know, are they going to need help with daily activities at some point as they age? ADUs, I know, is a hot topic of conversation, you know, in a lot of municipalities within Connecticut and also recently on the state level. About a third of older adults say they have some kind of interest in constructing an ADU. So I mentioned there are a lot of older adults who would like to stay in their homes, but they're not sure if they will be able to. So some of the reasons why, more than two thirds think they're going to have to make modifications to have adequate accessibility. So a lot of modifications are anticipated when it comes to bathroom modifications. Slips and falls are one of the biggest health hazards that older adults experience. And bathrooms, places where we have, you know, tile flooring, water, is a big issue for older adults. Easy access into and within your home, installing a medical emergency response system, improving lighting around the outside of the home, moving a bedroom to the first floor. So you can see, you know, some of the preferences that people have and some of the needs that they anticipate. So again, I had mentioned ADUs. So how does that fit in? This is going back a couple of years now, but we did a national survey of adults over the age of 18 and asked them some questions about why they might consider an accessory dwelling unit. For most folks, and again, if you'll remember a couple slides back, there are a lot of concerns that people have about their ability to be cared for or to act as a caretaker for a person in their life. In Connecticut right now, we have 460,000 unpaid family caregivers who provide care for a family member, a loved one, a neighbor. So interest in ADUs is driven in large part by creating spaces for loved ones to stay, providing spaces for family members or friends, or this third one down here, to have someone living close by and to feel more secure. You know, those first couple of answers tend to be younger homeowners who are interested in having, you know, mom or dad move into the backyard. But then this 35% response here, to have someone living close by and to feel more secure. Those tend to be older adults who want to stay in their home, but want the comfort of having somebody close by just to kind of keep an eye on them. So a lot of barriers to ADUs. You know, one barrier is just, it's not for everybody. The color coding here, the dark green, is, you know, a major reason somebody would not want an ADU. Light green is a minor reason, and then not a reason is that, you know, lighter green there. So even though some people really like the idea of ADUs, only about a third of folks say that they would need one. But cost for the folks who do want one, cost becomes the biggest barrier, followed by local zoning restrictions. So there are a few things, you know, with policy implications in here, particularly around potential increase in property taxes and local zoning restrictions. So how can AARP help? I feel like I'm going through all of this really quickly. But if you do want more information and want to connect with some of our resources, you know, one thing that I do want to mention, and this isn't housing specifically, although we do have funding through this program available for you know, innovative community housing initiatives. But every year, our national AARP office offers something called the Community Challenge Grant. The application window for this year is closed. Typically, the application for this goes live mid-February and closes by mid-April. But, you know, in the past 4 years of having the grant, we've awarded you know, more than $6 million, including $2.4 million in grants awarded to 184 communities, including a few communities right here in Connecticut. So pictures here, West Hartford received a grant in 2020 to make some crosswalk improvements. And Goodwin College received a grant 2 years ago to make some improvements to one of its walking trails. Again, just a couple other examples of some community challenge grants at work. These are not housing specific, but about 7% of our national community challenge grants do touch on housing. So tools to help local leaders.
Excuse me, Anna, could you wrap up pretty quickly because we're running out of time and I think we've gone over our allotment here.
Sorry about that. So what I am going to do is just let you take a peek at those links right there. If you go to aarp.org/livable, you will see that we have a lot of free worksheets, toolkits, publications on a variety of topics, including housing topics. This is an example of our accessory dwelling unit publication. We have something called a home fit guide that's more directed at individual homeowners to get them thinking about how to upgrade their homes. Just an example from there. Local training and resources. We have a local version of the Livable Communities grant. That grant goes live in September of every year. Here are a couple examples from recent years. We offer presentations to communities. These are volunteer-led presentations called Road to Livability. We have driver safety. Again, transportation and getting around is a huge component of what keeps older adults in their communities. So aarpdriversafety.org, more information there. And then to access a lot of resources, I can't recommend highly enough aarp.org/livable. There's the email address for our national livable team, their Twitter handle, and then my contact information right there at the bottom.
Thank you, Anna.
Anna, can you share these slides with us?
Sure. Yep, I'll send that to you. And yeah, I have about 10 slides that I kind of cut out, but I'll include that in what I send over to you in case folks have any interest in
that. Miles, can you redistribute it?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
A lot of good information and data for sure. So appreciate that.
Great. Thanks. And yeah, please feel free to get in touch. You know, we do have a lot of research, a lot of survey data, and I'm happy to help connect folks with anything that they might be interested in.
Thank you so much. Next, moving along, just wrapping up, if Kathy Lutz is here, she can give us an update on where they are with the legislation.
Sure. 2 weeks left to session, 2 weeks from today. There is every indication that the budget will be finalized before the last day of session, which would be wonderful, but they continue to say that's their belief. Some of the larger healthcare issues are off the table for the current session. Some remain, but the cannabis bill, depending on who you talk to, is either just about ready to go or maybe not done until a special session, but the issue is still alive and there is belief by legislative leaders anyway that they would be able to get to it before the end of session. It's been, as I'm sure you all know, difficult communications-wise because everything remains virtual, but it's moving ahead. I know that some folks had some questions on the crumbling foundations bills that were there, and there were two that that dealt with the indemnity company. Neither of them moved beyond the insurance committee. So those bills were to extended the deadline to 2030. So they never got out of the insurance committee. There are still three bills dealing with the issue. All by the delegation, you know, Jeff Curry, Senator Anwar, that group. One of them is the FOI bill, which is somewhat controversial. I'm protecting folks' information. Another allows folks to continue to push for a reassessment on their property values. So if there is any interest or desire to do something with extending the deadline on the indemnity company, I would suggest, well, let me know if you wanted to try to do that. I could reach out to the folks that still have the other bills that are alive. It would certainly be a germane amendment if they were willing to tack it on somewhere.
Thanks. Any questions for Kathy?
If I can, John Elsesser.
Yeah.
I think this is critical. I don't think that people understand that if there's not a lengthening of the indemnity corp, everything falls apart, just everything. So, you know, this is a top CROG priority. It's kind of gotten lost in the last couple months. And I think we have to ask that action be taken.
I concur with John. I mean, it just, the whole initiative just will end. Just that's it.
What were we? I'm sorry, I wasn't following. I got lost a little. What initiative will end?
The whole thing.
Only foundations.
There'll be no additional repairs. The Indemnity Corporation has a limited life. It's only got a couple of years left. And this used to be the top priority, and it's gone dead silent and got lost in COVID. And unfortunately, Steve Werber's leadership, has, you know, disappeared. I'm not saying this well. I'm not criticizing Steve. We miss him. And we just need to make this the top priority for all our towns.
Where do you think it got lost in the whole legislature? Do you think they took up too many bills? Do you think that?
Well, the insurance committee didn't do anything with it, and then it just we were dead silent.
We had worked through the winter with the state treasurer's office to try to develop a way to capitalize the. Revenue from the surcharge on home insurance in a way that we could get upfront funds to be able to have people not waiting until 30-32 to get their foundation fixed. And coupled with that was the need to extend life. And even if that capitalization doesn't, and by the way, we ended up thinking we were going to be successful and then it got killed too. But either way, we need to have the extension go so that even if we're only getting $10 million a year from the surcharge, somebody somehow has to be expending that money to fix people's foundations. So
where is Sahud Anwar and Jeff Curry on this then?
I don't know. Jeff has been, I know he's been ill,
right?
But he has been our stalwart spokesperson and perhaps... To John's point, we have been all remiss in just assuming that his success to date will continue.
Want me to try and coordinate a meeting with him,
or at least we need to find out what
the intentions are.
What the roadblock is.
Okay, I'll give him a call.
You concur with that, John?
Yes, but I think. As was mentioned, we need to try to get something tagged onto one of the live bills still, or the end run for some implementer. But we got 2 weeks left. And I think you're going to see the executive director quit.
You'll say
is there any opportunity?
There will be no authority to have an executive director.
We have one more year, but I think he's going to just say, I'm out, because he's already so frustrated by the lack of importance the state is giving this issue.
Would would there be any ability for the state to use any of the ARPA funding towards this?
That question hasn't been asked, and that's our fault. I asked it yesterday.
Why don't I give a quick call to Jeff and just see where they are with all of this, and maybe we're going to have to reconvene on our end to have a quick call to him before for options that he needs to raise, unless there's something going on that we're not aware of. I find it very hard to believe that Sahood and Jeff would just drop the ball like that and not see it through.
I agree, but trust but verify? Yeah.
I'll follow up.
Yep, Jeff would be a great start. Jeff would be a great start, and then we can proceed from there. Yep.
All right. So, if there's any other business to come before the, was there anything else anyone wanted to raise? If not, hope to see you all at the annual meeting. I hope you get registered. And thank you all very much. And I'll circle back around with Lyle, John, and Scott.
Great. Thank you.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep. We adjourn, Madam Mayor.
Thank you. Second.
Second, Lori Spielman.
Lori Spielman. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. Aye. Thank you.
Be well.
Yep.